Love makes the rest of our days here.
Yeah.
Love you.
Portland City Council will come back from recess. It's just before 10 a.m. Wednesday, June 30th. We'll proceed with the consent agenda. Does anyone have any items to pull off the consent agenda?
975, please.
975 is pulled from the consent agenda. Any others? I have to wait till we have a fourth vote. All right, we'll move to the regular agenda. Can you please read the title and call the vote for 995?
Authorized revenue bonds for transportation projects. Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 995 is approved. Wait on that one. Do you want to wait on your 997, Dan? Or can we do it now?
997.
The Human Trafficking Awareness Fund?
Oh, yeah, we could do that now.
Okay. Can you please read the title for resolution item number 997?
Declare July 2010 as Human Trafficking Awareness Month.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm very proud to bring this resolution forward today in partnership with Multnomah County, who's bringing forward the same item to their board of directors or board of commissioners tomorrow to declare July as Human Trafficking Month. My office has been working closely with the county on this issue, as well as with several other community partners. We're declaring this month Human Trafficking Month in response to the crisis that social workers, law enforcement agencies, and homeless youth shelters all say is growing. The crime has gone hidden far too long. With trafficking getting more media attention, particularly after the Dan Rather piece on the Huffington Post article, this issue is really starting to get the attention of the community. As part of Human Trafficking Month, these are the following events that will be happening in Portland. On July 1st, we're passing the resolution here. I'm sorry, July 1st, tomorrow, the county commissioners are passing the similar companion resolution to what we're passing today. On July 10th, we will have Stop the Demand for Trafficking at Szymanski Park. There'll be a rally. On July 12th, there is a human trafficking lecture series at 6 p.m. at Kell's Irish Pub. On July 21st, there will be a briefing on trafficking at City Hall at 2 p.m. And then on July 27th, there will be a screening of the Dan Rather piece called Pornland, Oregon, Child Prostitution in Portland. Our community awareness won't stop after this work this month, but this is a good start to educate ourselves and the community about the many issues and tragedies around human trafficking. I don't know if we had anybody here to testify.
No one signed up.
Okay.
Great. All right, would you please call the vote on item number 997?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for your leadership on this hugely important issue. As the commissioner in charge of the Office of Human Relations, I'm very concerned about this issue, as is the Human Rights Commission. It is a disgrace. We must not tolerate people prostituting women and children in our city. We must stop tolerating people who use prostitutes in our city. Human trafficking can take many forms, including forced labor and commercial sexual exploitation. In any case, human trafficking violates the core principles of individual freedom and human dignity and who we are as Portlanders. Portland police report 5 cases of human trafficking every week. In a 2008 FBI mission, Portland was ranked 2nd in the country for the number of youth victims found. And the myth that prostitution in particular is a victimless crime is a myth. It is wrong, and we must stop perpetuating that myth. Half the people who are prostituted are children. Under 18, there is no way they can give consent. So I am grateful to Dan Rather for highlighting this on national television. we each need to take responsibility for our part. And I, again, thank Commissioner Saltzman for his leadership on 82nd and the community there, who have instituted neighborhood patrols and who are working diligently with the police. And the work of the police officers who are tracking sex offenders and others in our community, and Mayor Adams and the rest of the staff who are going after grants to help us address this problem. These are staggering numbers. This is an outrage. And we need to continue, we need to focus on it, which is why, one of the reasons why we're having this whole month, that I encourage everyone here to do something, whether it's donating to an organization that helps women and children find safe homes, whether it's joining a neighborhood patrol. There's something that every person in our community can do to help address this horrible problem. And I welcome you to come back here on July 24th for the human trafficking briefing to City Council. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman for bringing this resolution forward. He has a long track record of work on this issue, and it's totally appropriate for this city, given the high level of human trafficking that has been occurring here for far too long, to focus on it over the next month. Since taking over as police commissioner, there have been a few issues that have risen to the top in terms of the need for additional work, and this is definitely one of them. And look forward to coordinating over the next month as we look to a package of reforms that are intended to provide a greater level of prevention and enforcement to stop human trafficking. So thank you for your work on this. Aye. 997 is approved. Can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Let's go ahead and hear item 975.
Accept a grant in the amount of $1,930,802 from Oregon Department of Transportation for construction of the Foster Woodstock Streetscape Project.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. And I'm perpetually stunned by your modesty in not putting these things in, on the regular agenda and putting having a 30-minute presentation. But I asked Rich Newlands of the Bureau of Transportation to come and, are you Portland Development Commission?
Transportation.
That's what I thought. Thank you. Just to come and give us a brief discussion, information about this nearly $2 million grant that we're getting.
Sure. Thank you. Rich Newlands, Project Manager for the Portland Bureau of Transportation. The Bureau of Transportation and the Portland Development Commission are pleased to announce that through this IGA, they accept a $2 million grant from the Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program. The long-awaited Lentz Foster Woodstock Streetscape Plan is moving forward to construction. This project was present at the creation of the Lentz Town Center Urban Renewal District, identified in the original URA plan as a key transportation improvement needed to support revitalization of the Town Center's commercial district. The project's main goal is to rebalance the function of the Foster Woodstock couplet, which currently operates essentially as an extension of the I-205 freeway interchange, to push the freeway environment further outside of the commercial district, and to recreate a more pedestrian-oriented, neighborhood-friendly environment conducive to business development. The project implements major portions of the Lentz Business District Transportation Plan adopted by Council in 1999. Major elements of the project include widening over 2,000 lineal feet of sidewalk to city standard for pedestrian districts, along with street trees, pedestrian scale lighting, and other amenities. The addition of 28 new on-street parking spaces, pedestrian crossing improvements to enhance safety, the realignment of 91st Avenue at Foster Road to improve multimodal safety and circulation to key redevelopment sites, reconstruction of Southeast Ramona, east of 92nd Avenue, with unique design elements to create a strong, inviting connection to the new MAX station. And finally, gateway improvements at each end of the couplet to send a clear message to the driving public that Lentz is no longer a place to zoom through, but a destination. Thank you.
Thank you. So this is an example of city staff doing what we said we were going to do, and Mayor Adams is the commissioner in charge of transportation and at the Portland Development Commission doing what we said we were going to do. And it's a wonderful project in East Portland that will greatly enhance the feeling of it being a town center rather than as an extension of the freeway. And I just wanted to highlight that and to thank everybody involved.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. That's very nice of you. Thank you. Please call the vote.
It's a non-emergency.
We need to move on it because it'll show up next week. Yeah, let's add an emergency clause.
Move emergency clause.
It would help if we could get the, this is the construction season and we are hoping to get it going today.
Second.
Please call the roll on adding the emergency clause.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Please call the vote on the emergency ordinance 975.
Saltzman.
Thank you for this explanation. It sounds like a great project, much needed, and glad to get it going sooner rather than later. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz.
So the total project cost is almost $4.7 million, and so this is nearly $2 million from the Oregon Department of Transportation. So we thank both the taxpayers of Portland and the taxpayers of Oregon. Aye.
Adams.
Well, thank you for your great work on this. This has been a long time in coming, and it wouldn't happen without your great staff leadership. So, aye. 975 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, item number 991?
Do you want to read 991 through 993 altogether?
Please. Thank you.
991, authorize a grant to United Way in the amount not to exceed $5,000 to support the Community Connect strategy to increase parental and community involvement and support for all youth. 992, authorize a grant to community and parents for public schools in the amount not to exceed $4,000 to support the Community Connect strategy to increase parental and community involvement and support for all youth. And 993, amend an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County related to the Sun Service Coordinating Council.
If I could have Howard Klink, Scott Bailey, and Peggy Szymanski, please come forward. I'll make just a few introductory remarks. The items before the City Council today are related to the strategy, community strategy, of the Education Cabinet, which is co-chaired by County Chair Jeff Kogan and myself. The goal of the Education Cabinet, created a year and a half ago, was to cut the dropout rate in half in 5 years and to increase double the matriculation after high school graduation to advanced skills training or post-secondary education. These initiatives are intended to help do just that. United Way has been working with the city as part of our Community Connect strategy that seeks to increase the involvement of community volunteers in schools, particularly in the ways that directly impact the graduation rate, such as tutoring and mentoring. The community, and that's 991. 992, community and parents for public schools, along with the Commission on Children and Families, are doing work to increase parental involvement in the education of their youth, particularly for East Portland and East County districts. We know that parent involvement is a critical success factor for Portland's youth. And with the county's Sun School program, of which the city also contributes money, they will support the ongoing services of the Sun program and will leverage additional resources, especially focused on East Portland. And I'd just add that I was asked to represent the county and the city at a recent Sun School National Conference, and I knew that the Sun program was good just from my experience of it here locally, but the Sun program is like a rock star among community school programs in the United States. I felt much love, and I really, come in at the tail end of years of work on this program. So let's begin with Mr. Klink.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, thanks for the opportunity to comment on item 991. It's an exciting opportunity and partnership, emerging partnership, that whose goal is to mobilize and expand volunteerism in the community with primary focus on expanding the number of, increasing the number of volunteers who are involved both in the schools and more generally with youth. I think most of you are aware that there's a strong history of partnership between the City of Portland and United Way. It goes back probably before the Economic Opportunity Initiative, more recently the Assets Mapping Project with the Mayor's Office, the Everybody Counts Initiative, the Community Relief Fund, and these have both been planning partnerships and fundraising partnerships that have been very successful and have produced great results. Well, here's one more. Funding request in front of you this morning is, as the mayor indicated, part of the Community Connect strategy. It will achieve this goal of expanding volunteerism to support youth by building a web-based platform that will bring together a number of currently fragmented and different efforts that are involved in recruitment of volunteerism for youth and make it much easier and more efficient for individuals who do want to volunteer to connect with youth-serving programs. That's the specific focus of it. Partners are included right now: City of Portland, United Way, Hands on Portland, Oregon Mentors, the faith community as a whole, and I think there are more partners lining up, both in terms of connecting to the project and for the purposes of making funding contributions to it as we speak. Promotion of volunteerism is a key foundation component of United Way's mission. We're proud and honored to be asked to support and work with this project and thank the city for the contribution that they're making.
But we couldn't do it without United Way, so thank you. Scott?
Hi, good morning, and thanks for your support. For over 11 years now, our community and Parents for Public Schools has been working within the Portland Public Schools District to increase parent involvement. As the mayor indicated, that's a key building block to student success. One of the things that we've done annually over the last 10 years is a parent leadership conference. I know Commissioner Fritz has attended, and I think you have too, or at least Jane Ames has been there as your representative.
Jane's even better than me.
Yeah. And at those conferences, we bring together parents from all over the city. It's a very diverse group, and we do workshops. It's a chance for parents to network and find out what's successful in different schools that they could bring to their school. What we want to do with the support that you're giving us is to expand this to all school districts in the county. We see this as a building block to develop a whole system of support for parent involvement. We've worked a lot with Sun School's turnout. Let me give you just one example for what we mean by parent involvement. We worked with Portland Public Schools to develop a workshop targeted towards second, third grade parents on what you can do at home to help your child become a better writer. And I wish I'd had it when my kids were that young. We involved Sun School's, helped us with parent turnout. The curriculum department developed the workshop, and it's now, I think, 20 different schools had that workshop this year in Portland Public Schools, largely Title I schools. And it's very successful, and I actually think a Portland staff person got flown out to El Paso because they were so impressed with the workshop. They wanted to be trained in it. That's the kind of involvement that we envision, and that's the kind of workshop that we have at these conferences. So I'll stop there, and thank you again for your support.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. Peggy Samolinski with Multnomah County. I'm with the Department of County Human Services with the Sun Service System Division within that department. I want to thank you, Mayor, for your kind words about your trip to Philadelphia. I was gratified to hear that you had a good time. It seemed like you're enjoying yourself, and I know I heard lots of comments from folks about what a cool mayor we had.
Oh, really?
People were, yes, you were very, you were effervescent on that panel in an evening when folks were tiring, I think, from the long day, and it was nice to have
It was the interpretive
energy.
Dance number that
did
it.
Well, I wasn't going to bring that up, but since you did, sir. I'm here about item 993, which is amending the intergovernmental agreement with the county, particularly for the Sun Service System. As you know, the city has a longstanding partnership with Multnomah County and the school districts and our nonprofits to support the Sun Service System and the Sun Community Schools in particular. This amendment will continue that support in three key areas. One is backfilling a small reduction that was taken out of Parks and Recreation and city pass-through funds to the county. And although the amount is modest, every nickel counts on the ground at a Sun School, as I think you others would attest to. So that really helps us if we can backfill that reduction. Second, the funds will go towards supporting the staffing of the Sun Service System Coordinating Council. And I think all of you have had visits in recent months from Joanne Fuller and others from the Sun Coordinating Council, kind of shoring up support and talking about Sun. And the staffing of that council is vitally important, and we appreciate the city's support on that. In the third area, we will be discussing with that council, which is a governing body for the Sun Service System, about the use of funds to support high schools to advance efforts in the Education Cabinet's key strategies about supporting high school completion and how Sun Community Schools can become a key lever in that effort, as well as supporting, perhaps it might go toward a federal grant that we're planning to apply to the full-service community schools with the federal government. So we'll take that conversation to our council and have that discussion here in August. So we thank you for your support.
You got it. You do great work. Thank you all very much. Anyone wish to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Carla, can you please call the vote on all three, or each of the three?
991. Saltzman?
Well, I just want to thank Howard and Scott and Peggy for your great work. Thank the mayor for his strategies here. But I know all three of you are tireless advocates for youth in our county and in our city, and appreciate the work you've done all over all the years. Please to vote aye.
Leonard.
Thank you. Aye.
Fritz.
So I'm particularly surprised to hear that we've been in community and partners for public schools for 11 years. And we've been struggling with school funding for a long time. As my oldest child started kindergarten the year after Measure 5 passed. And so we've been through this, and we continue to go through this. And now with the national crisis, we are continuing to go through this. So it makes these partnerships even more important. And we will get through this. We will find ways to get through this and to continue to give every child in Portland a quality education in public schools. Thank you, Mayor Adams, for your leadership on this, for the United Way in Multnomah County as well. Mentioned former Commissioner Jim Francisconi, who was so instrumental in setting up the Sun Schools program. This is truly a legacy that he can be proud of. I was a little thrown by the name Community Connect because, of course, Mayor Potter had a Community Connect that was the Bureau Improvement Project with looking at how citizens and government could work together. This is really an extension of that, and for many of our students, the school is their government, and certainly as a parent, I learned a lot about governmental structure through my involvement in Portland Public Schools. And so I think it's a worthy successor to that previous process to give this name to this particularly vital connection between the community, the teachers, the educators, and the students. So thank you again. Aye.
Adams.
I want to thank, again, the Education Cabinet. I want to thank my education team, Kali Ladd, Reese Lord, and Todd Diskin. Aye. So approve the next item, 992.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 992 is approved. 993.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 993 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 994?
Authorized contract with Henderson, Young, and Company for professional, technical, and expert services required to develop a transportation system development charge overlay district.
Hi. How are you?
Well, how are you?
Good. Art. What are we looking at?
So this, per council's direction, is part of the funding package for the Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail Project. Council proposed that a new SDC district be formed both in the university district area and in the inner southeast area. So this is a consultant contract with Henderson & Young and Company who will assist us in doing the analysis required to evaluate the appropriate geography and the appropriate project list to create this new SDC overlay. This was through a result of a competitive recruitment, looked at multiple consultant groups, and chose Henderson & Young as the best consultant team.
What kind of community involvement will there be in setting this up?
For setting up the process, we would plan to set up a stakeholder advisory committee and plan to initiate that probably later this fall. Depending on the timing, that may relate some to the stationary planning that we're also planning to initiate in the inner southeast area. So there may be some common representative for both processes. But yeah, so there'll be a series of public meetings and then probably at very least an open house. And then we'll be back before you with the recommendation.
And should folks contact you if they're interested in participating in that process?
Sure. Yes. Yeah, that'd be great.
What was the geographic area that the study encompasses?
So at very least, we're expecting the university district to be part of this overlay, and then also inner southeast, probably just from the river to Powell, but that's part of the conversation we need to have. For the light rail geography, that's sort of a common geography. I guess there's a possibility that the district could extend farther along 17th Avenue as well. But,
And by university district, you mean the south waterfront?
South Waterfront actually already has an overlay district, so this would not be adding another overlay on top of South Waterfront. Would be the area around the PSU area, market to the 405 in that area.
This is part of negotiations I had with PSU, so they know it's coming.
They do.
But yes. Just to be clear, we're not approving that funding today. We're looking at if we want to do it, this is how to do it.
You're providing the PDOT staff with the consultant resources needed to do the full evaluation and prepare a recommendation.
It's really how to do it. Because we've already approved as a matter of policy that this is a key funding leg of our $30 million. So stakeholders know that. That was part of a year and a half of outreach and including with negotiations with PSU. So this is how to do it as opposed to should we do it? Right. I just want to make sure everyone knows that.
Right. One key question is we're going to go through a fair amount of effort to establish this district, so we probably should think about not just funding a portion of light rail with this, but some other needs that might happen. So part of the conversation will be what other projects might be appropriate for funding on this list. Things that, like particularly with the Portland-Milwaukee light rail and the closed-loop streetcar, there's funding for both of those projects that are needed, and there's sort of ancillary pedestrian bicycle facilities and those kind of things that we might want to look at funding at the same time.
And the boundary of that would be included is also up for discussion.
It is, yeah.
All right. Any other discussion? Anyone wish to testify on this matter? Carla, can you please call the vote on this emergency ordinance?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 994 is approved. Let's see. We decided to pay for 995 out of Water Bureau budget. So moving on to 996, can you please read the title for emergency ordinance 996?
You didn't even catch that.
Authorize execution of a successor labor agreement with Labor's Local 483 relating to terms and conditions of employment of represented employees in the recreation bargaining unit.
You were out of the room, Commissioner. Hi, what are we looking at
good
here?
Good morning. For the record, my name is Yvonne Decker, Director for the Bureau of Human Resources. The REC employee agreement covers 90 employees, and those employees run our Sun schools, our community centers, our cultural centers, such as the Multnomah Arts Center, Pinnock Mansion, the Community Music Center. On November 17th, Council authorized me to put on the table a proposal to all of our bargaining units to see if we could get agreement and basically if the bargaining unit accepted the proposal to pretty much roll over that agreement. The bargaining unit that did accept the city's proposal was the REC employee union. And so Patrick Ward was our chief spokesperson. We did not make any real significant changes because they accepted our proposal. But Patrick is going to go over what's included in the agreement and what was a part of the city's proposal that led us to agreement. And at the end of his conclusion, we're recommending that the council actually ratifies this agreement.
Morning, Mayor Adams, Commissioners, Patrick Ward, Labor Relations Coordinator with BHR. We had a very expedited and fruitful bargaining with the recreation unit. At your direction, we have entered into a three-year agreement. There will be no change in the wage rates for the first year, and the changes in the wage rates for the second, third years of the agreement will be adjusted by the change in the consumer price index for wages for Portland, with a minimum of no increase and a maximum of 5%. We continue the same cost share on health insurance benefits for the life of the agreement. Aside from some minor clarifications in the contract remains as the current contract. It expires at the midnight tonight.
Questions, comments from council?
I have a couple of questions. Was the union not concerned about the change in the bargaining unit to over 1,200 hours of work a year rather than 860?
That was an addition. We had already entered into a letter of agreement during the current contract with Local 483 to make that change from 860 to 1,200 hours for seasonal casual employees.
Did we give them something in return for that?
No.
Why are health benefits only applicable for working scheduled hours on a regular basis rather than just the number of hours?
Commissioner, we used to have an 80-hour rule, and last contract we actually tried to move away from that 80-hour rule for administrative reasons. But in the process of doing that, we needed some clarification because the unions then contended that if someone came and worked 1 hour, that they should be able to get full-time health benefits. And so we were actually trying to clarify that by saying, no, you need to work your regular hours in order to get your health benefits.
Oh, I see. Okay. And then just to emphasize, the wage increase is set with a 0% base. So
the,
if there's no increase.
The CPI is, yes, it's zero.
If there's no increase in the consumer price index, then.
Correct. Right. Now, the part that the council does need to be aware of is that there is a Me Too in this contract. REC accepted the proposal that the city put on the table, but they asked for Me Too so that if we do something different with non-reps, DCTU, COPIA, our other bargaining units, that they would expect to, you know, have us to come back and give them that. So if for some reason we decided to give our other bargaining units a CPI, they, you know, have a Me Too that we would have to go back and give them that CPI.
And does the Me Too apply to things that might be less in other contracts than what they have?
Yes.
Thank you.
So I think you know I'm concerned of a provision we have in our DCTU contract that pays people overtime when they work less than 40 hours a week.
Yes.
So whatever, and I am.
That Me Too. That Me Too would, if we were to reach that agreement with the DCTU, then that's part of the Me Too. What I can tell you is that the overtime in this particular, for this particular bargaining unit, is very de minimis. They don't use a lot of overtime, and it's usually in case of emergencies. But having said that, we would be looking at the same.
So the same rule would carry over.
Correct. We'll be looking at the same rule.
So can you? Well, I think, as you know, as my colleagues know, I'm concerned about this because it doesn't make sense, common sense, for people to be paid for overtime for working less than 40 hours. It's also costing us $3 to $4 million a year in overtime that shouldn't be paid, in my opinion, which is about the size of our budget deficit. We just adopted a budget too, so I'm not sure I can support this. Although I have nothing against the good faith and intentions that were brought to this contract by Local 483 and the city. But because of my concerns over Article 9 in the DCTU contract and the fact that, left untouched, it does carry over to this contract as well, I'm not sure I can support this contract until this council has come to grips, I think, with the issues in the DCTU contract, including paying overtime for people that work less than 40 hours. I mean, you're looking puzzled, so...
Let me before you respond, let me make sure that representative, I just reverted back a decade. Commissioner Saltzman's comments are balanced with another viewpoint. He would characterize this as an issue wherein people need to work 40 hours a week to get overtime. And I think that that's a little misleading to people that are listening. And by way of an example, at the Water Bureau, we have men and women who work on the front lines to keep, and I'm very reluctant to have this public conversation, but in an interview I did yesterday with a member of the media that's present, it was clear that Commissioner Saltzman discussed some of the issues that we have discussed in executive session related to this topic, which I have concerns about.
But talk about our
given that that's in the public forum, I think make sure that there are two points of views that the public is hearing, and Commissioner Saltzman, while he certainly has the right to say his position, I would say that that's a position that I thought had been addressed back in the 30s when the 8-hour day became the hallmark for American workers. Because, in fact, what this is a proposal that Commissioner Saltzman is supporting that would deny a person working on a Water Bureau crew who went to a main break, who would normally get off at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, but because the main break has to be fixed before they go home, has to work till 9 o'clock that night. Potentially, that person could be on duty for 13 hours. The consequence of what Commissioner Saltzman is proposing would be that person would work straight time after 5 o'clock, not overtime, as most Americans commonly think of overtime, if earlier in that week they had a sick child and stayed home with the sick child and didn't work that let's say on a Monday, stayed home with the sick child. On a Tuesday, they went back to work, and because they stayed home with the sick child and used their accumulated leave, family leave, and then went to work the next day, the completion of that work week had of them actually being at work was less than 40 hours, so they can be put in the position of working two or three 12-hour days without getting any overtime. I think that's an anathema to most working Americans, and that's the consequence of what Commissioner Saltzman's proposing. I oppose that vehemently, as do I think most Portlanders and most Americans. So I think that to argue that this city council in this city that is known for a number of very great causes, many of which Commissioner Saltzman has spearheaded, by the way, to stake out a position publicly that people after working 8 hours should not get overtime is not something I agree with, support, and will do everything I can to fight. So not only do I disagree with Commissioner Saltzman, I think that it's unfair to have breached what has been what I consider a if not rule, a long-standing tradition of this council not to disclose in public good or bad discussions we have in executive session. That's why we have executive session, and I don't think this whole topic is appropriate to be discussed here or anywhere else until we've concluded all our negotiations.
If I may respond, I asked for an explanation of this article when I learned about it in executive session, Article 9. And it does honor, as all people do, 8-hour days and 40-hour work weeks.
That's not true.
Before you get overtime.
That is not true.
But we have a provision since 1970s where people can get overtime based on the hours they've been paid rather than hours worked. And I think that defies sort of the common sense idea of what overtime is all about. Despite what you just said, Commissioner Leonard, we pay people overtime when they've worked less than 8 hours or 40 hours. And it's to the tune of $2 to $3 to $4 million a year. It's not an insignificant amount of money. And I think we just passed a budget that's laying off people. All these people, union members, could have their jobs if we dealt with this provision that pays overtime for people that work less than 40 hours a week. And I think this is something, we need to tackle as a council. I think it makes sense. It's about keeping jobs, not about, I think, condoning a practice that has become outdated and not acceptable to the public anymore.
So
I'd like to ask a clarifying question just to make sure that the facts that we're discussing, the facts, and not what some of us are purporting the facts to be. An example I gave, and I'd like a response of Yvonne from this. An example I gave is that if a Water Bureau worker, a mom, let's say, had a sick child on Monday, and or dad, either way, had a sick child on Monday, took family leave, stayed home, didn't come to work, showed up to work on Tuesday. We had a main break, and a normal time to get off work is 5 o'clock. They had to stay and work out in the street to get the main repaired and work till 9 o'clock. That would normally be 4 hours at time and a half. If the position Commissioner Saltzman is taking is actually adopted and is part of the collective bargaining agreements, is it accurate that those 4 hours that person works under that type of an agreement where we would restrict overtime until you actually worked physically were present, you would not get overtime? Would that person work at straight time from 5 to 9 o'clock or time and a half?
Currently, the city pays overtime for DCTU and REC employees for time paid, not time worked. So the example that you described, if we were to have a change in the contract, we would actually be paying them for their actual time worked. And in your example, because they would not have worked 40 hours because the Monday that they were home on dependent care was time paid but not worked, they would not be eligible for time and a half. They would get straight time. Your example is correct.
So they could literally work up to 16 hours straight, which we have Water Bureau crews that do. They could work up to 16 hours straight and not get overtime.
Correct.
Okay.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. We can set up the contracts anyway that's legal.
Correct.
So we could set it up so that if you worked longer than your scheduled hours on that particular day, you got overtime. But if you had taken 3 vacation days that week and then volunteered for an extra shift on the Saturday, you did not get overtime for the Saturday. We could do that.
Correct. If
Well, you can't. You have to have agreement to do that. Both parties have to agree.
That's what we're still in negotiations with. Commissioner Saltzman, if I could address, I share your concerns, and I think that we need to get to something that's common sense and fair to both employees and the taxpayers. On this particular contract, as Yvonne has said, there's not that much overtime that's for these particular workers. They're already part-time, many of them, so we don't get to the issue of having, and they don't get as much benefits either, so that they're not having a lot of sick days and vacation days because of their part-time nature. They don't earn as much. And also that we do have in this contract setting the wage increase with a 0% base, which I believe is appropriate, that if there isn't a cost of living increase, there isn't a wage increase. So for those reasons, I'm going to support this particular ordinance, particularly since Yvonne has said that there's a Me Too clause, which does apply to any takes that would happen in further negotiation as well as to any gives.
So is there any additional issue regarding this that hasn't been aired out?
Yes, I'm actually concerned for the other reason on the Me Too clause. Can you point to me the language that would indicate that their overtime would revert to a lesser standard if another bargaining unit agreed to the proposal Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner Fritz support?
Okay, we didn't actually, what we did, Commissioner, is that the union and my office agreed to a Me Too. We did not put the Me Too in the actual contract, but we agreed that by them going out first, that any economic changes that we made with non-reps and any of our other bargaining units, that it would carry over to this contract. And so, if we actually, had an overtime change, we would then be sitting with this unit and looking at all of those economic issues that we have agreed to. So if we actually do overtime or shift differential or premiums, but any of those types of things, we've agreed with this unit that we would, that those things would carry over.
So in the past, in the city's past, and I think this predates those of you that are at BHR, Me Too clauses were not uncommon, actually, right, in collective bargaining agreements. And the way they were written was that if another bargaining unit received a benefit,
correct,
a benefit, then the bargaining unit that had the Me Too clause got that benefit. So I will sit here and tell you that it would be my position, notwithstanding I appreciate how you characterized your answer to Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner Fritz, I would not agree, nor would I want to agree, that even if for some reason we changed the calculation for how we paid overtime, so people who worked after 8 hours, if they used some kind of a leave that week or had to work at straight time, I would not want that to apply to this unit. And I think they would sit here and tell you their intention was not for that to happen. Two, I do think that a bargaining unit that is as, I will say, bold as this bargaining unit, as to be willing to be the first bargaining unit to agree to a set of wages, hours, and working conditions before the others have, should be rewarded for their good behavior and not punished. So I would say that, yes, if we did bargain some CPI increase, which is highly unlikely, but if we did, that they should receive that. But I also would argue vehemently, and I hope the majority of the council would agree with me, that if some other bargaining unit agreed to some other provision for overtime, that would not apply to this unit.
Well, Commissioner, I had this, those specific conversations with the unit so that they would understand that because of where the city was and our economic conditions, that we may be coming, that the Me Too would include those things, that we would be sitting down and talking with them. And, certainly I would be taking council's direction if council directed me, not to deal with that issue with this bargaining unit, then it would be off the table.
So that's, I want to get that on the record, that if in my vote in supporting this, it is not in agreement with any other position, that if some benefit decrease is negotiated with some other bargaining unit, that it applies to this unit.
Could I clarify a question? What percentage of this, of the recreation unit, is seasonal, part-time, and or temporary?
The 90 individuals in this agreement are all either full-time or permanent part-time.
Okay. Other discussion on this issue?
Yeah, I just want to clarify. So the state, as I understand, since the mid-1990s, has adopted the federal overtime standard, which is a 40-hour work week?
I believe the state has done so.
But the city has not adopted that change?
The city hasn't, and there are a mixture of practices. Some jurisdictions have adopted it, some have not, because of the state's economic shortfalls. I believe that they did adopt it.
Into the collective bargaining agreements?
I believe so.
And just
the
to clarify,
the state and federal law are based on 40-hour work weeks.
For
overtime purposes.
The state statute and the federal statute are the same.
And do the state and federal statutes address the issue of the standard work day, so that if you whatever you've agreed to as your standard work day, whether it's 10, 8, or 12, if you work over, that is overtime?
Well, it's all overtime. The question is it paid at time and a half, or is it paid at straight time? And so
does the statute address that?
The statute, I'd have to go back and look at the statute, but the statute doesn't require a jurisdiction to pay it a time and a half. The statute, says that you can pay it a straight time. Then I think from that point, it depends on individual collective bargaining agreements to, whether or not a jurisdiction, what they've actually agreed to.
But just to be clear, I support paying time and a half for overtime if an employee works over their eight, whatever their standard shift is, whether it's eight or longer than that.
Well, let me.
I'm not done. Thank you.
Okay.
I agree with Commissioner Saltzman that paying overtime for additional shifts, if 40 hours has not been worked, is not reasonable, and I'd like to revert to the state and federal standard on that.
But let me be clear. I was in the legislature when the state law passed, and I respect Yvonne a lot, but I do not believe the state collective bargaining agreements reflect what the Republican-dominated state legislature passed in 1995.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and
The state statute passed in 1995 over the strong opposition of a number of people in the legislature who represented working people, but it was dominated heavily by Republicans back then, and they had actually veto-proof majorities that they passed this particular statute by. And notwithstanding anybody's comments regarding whether or not they think people should get paid after 8 hours, the state statute says, and it simply says, you actually have to work 40 hours before you get overtime. So if you do something different than that, that is beyond what the state statute allows. So for people who are not unionized in this state, for instance, people who work at McDonald's, people who work at fast food restaurants, the state statute applies to them because they don't have a collective bargaining agreement. And as we stand here today, they can work literally 12 hours a day for 36 hours every week, and they never get overtime. And that is how it is applied for people that are non-union. That it was the intent of the drafters of the statute. The literal application of what two of my colleagues are saying they're supporting is, and most of our overtime is, at least at the Water Bureau, not working an extra day, not coming in, you know, taking vacation on Monday and Tuesday and then picking up a day on Saturday and getting overtime. Most of our overtime, in fact, is when the crews are out in the streets and at the end of their normal workday, they can't just pack up their lunch pails and go home at 5 o'clock if there is an entire community without water. So they stay until the water gets turned on. That's an actual real-life application of how a worker's day goes. Many of those workers, if the position that my colleagues are advocating is adopted, will be impacted directly working up to 16 hours in a row. If they took one day of family leave, they could work 16 hours, and they often do, and often more, until the water gets turned back on. So what I'm saying here is that I don't think there has been any collective bargaining agreement at the state or any other local level that has adopted the state statute. However, there are a number of working class people throughout this state that are stuck with what the state did.
So I've let the conversation go in depth on this issue, and I think it's been useful to air some of these points of view out. But the matter before us is about this successor labor agreement for the recreation bargaining unit. Unless there's objection, do I have to get a vote to remove the emergency clause? So I move that we remove the emergency clause.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to remove the emergency clause. Any discussion? Carla, would you please call the vote on removing the emergency clause?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. The item moves to the second reading next week. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 998?
Authorize the Bureau of Environmental Services to acquire certain permanent easements necessary for construction of the Royal Highlands Phase 2 Local Improvement District Project number E08888 through the exercise of the city's eminent domain authority.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. In February 2009, City Council adopted a resolution to begin formation of the Royal Highlands Phase 2 Local Improvement District. In this agreement, the Bureau of Environmental Services will assume ownership and maintenance responsibility for a private sewer system that serves properties in this LID. If anybody has further questions, we have staff here that can answer those questions.
Any questions? All right. Anyone wish to testify on 998? Carla, can you please call the vote on 998?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Can you please read the title for 4/5, item number 9981?
Accept bid of R&R General Contractors, Inc. for the Southeast Tibbetts-Harrison Green Streets Project for $508,409.
This is purchasing working on behalf of the Bureau of Environmental Services. Ms. Moody, how are you?
Good, Mayor. Thank you very much. Christine Moody, Procurement Services. You have before you the procurement report recommending a contract award to the low bidder. The low bidder is R&R General Contractors, who is an Oregon State Certified Minority-Owned Business. R&R is retaining most of the work on this project as the prime contractor, resulting in 97.5% MWSB participation on this project. I'll turn this back over to Council if you have any questions.
Discussion from Council.
Why is this on the four-fifths?
It was on consent, and it missed some filing. And so the Bureau was unable to wait a couple of weeks until we could get this back onto the agenda.
Is it an emergency ordinance?
No, it's a procurement report.
So they couldn't wait another week?
It's 2 weeks.
Yeah, we don't meet next week.
We're not meeting next week. Okay. I see. So that's the reason for it. Because I think one of the good things about having these on our agenda, you've obviously done the work and we ask questions about the bids and the process and the percentage of minority women, emerging small businesses in it. One of the other advantages to having it just on the agenda so that everybody knows that this bid is going to this company and that if there's any objections. So I'm willing to vote for it today because you are all usually so diligent at getting things on the agenda and with the explanation that it couldn't wait for 2 weeks because we don't have a meeting next week. Thank you.
Just a couple of things for program note, procurement reports come directly to Council. They don't need the commissioner in charge, and it's the timing of which is almost always dictated by the sponsoring bureau. Yeah. Thanks. All right, is there entertain a motion to accept the procurement report?
So moved.
Moved and seconded. Can you please call the vote on the procurement report, item number 998-1?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
It's interesting. After a year and a half, I'm still learning new things about council procedure. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Council's in recess till 6 p.m.
So I appreciate another discussion.
Thank you. I'm glad we have another meeting set up.